Hi, everyone, and welcome to Women on the Edge of Evolution, Awakening Our Power to Co-Create Our Lives and Shape Our Collective Future. My name is Paula Dowd, and I'm the Program Director of Feminine Power Global Community, the organization producing this event. I am delighted to welcome you to Part 27 in our series today, featuring honored guest August Gold on the topic, Answering the Call, Life is Talking, Are You Listening? But before we begin, I want to take a moment to thank all of you for your active participation in this dialogue, both live on the teleseminar last week and also on our Facebook and Gaia groups. We continue to be inspired by the incredible support and enthusiasm that is coming in from all corners of the globe. As of this week, we have over 8,000 members on our Facebook group and a very rich engagement going on in our Gaia community, which continues to grow every day. If you haven't yet jumped into the conversation and would like to connect with other women who are participating in the series, we encourage you to join us. You can find links to both our Facebook and Gaia groups in the confirmation email we sent you for today's call. We also want to thank our event partners and Evolutionary Sisters, Siona Van Dyke at Gaia Community, and Rochelle Marmerstein at The Shift Movie, as well as our 8 co-sponsors for all of their support. If you're joining us for the first time today, the way the call will work is that I will introduce Catherine Woodward Thomas, who is one of the 2 visionary women behind this groundbreaking series, and then she will introduce August and today's call topic and process. Catherine is the co-creator with Claire Zammit of our Feminine Power Transformative Courses designed just for women. Together, they co-lead a global learning community that's dedicated to empowering women to realize their highest potentials and make their greatest contribution. Catherine is a national best-selling author and co-creator of our Feminine Power Transformative Courses, as well as other transformational teachings that have been successfully used by thousands of people worldwide. She's a highly trained specialist in transformative education with over 15 years of experience designing and facilitating seminars that support the emergence of life-altering shifts in consciousness, both individually and collectively. Catherine's coaching and facilitation integrates her 17 years of training and work as a psychotherapist with over 38 years of spiritual practice and study, and it serves as a powerful bridge between the two disciplines. She is also co-author of the forthcoming book, Feminine Power, Awakening to the Creative Force of Life. So welcome, Catherine, and I know I speak for all of us when I say how much we're looking forward to your dialogue with August today.
Thank you so much, Paula. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to Women on the Edge of Evolution. I am Catherine Woodward Thomas, and I'm just so happy to be here with all of you and deeply appreciate your participation in our ongoing inquiry into our role as women in co-creating the future of our world. Thank you for being right in the center of the inquiry with us, right on the edge here, partnering with us and consciously taking on the creation of a world that really reflects deeper levels of care, heart, and profound well-being for all. And so for those of you who are just joining us, I want to welcome you into the conversation. We have women from all over the world on this call each week, and I want you to know that you're a part of something that's really big, that's waking up for all of us. And for those of you who would like to connect personally with one another, I want to invite you to consider hopping on to the free Evolutionary Women's Cafe, which is a facilitated community conversation that's held every 45 minutes after the call. So right after the call, for 45 minutes, there's an Evolutionary Women's Cafe. So that's going to be just at about 7:05 this evening. And it's an opportunity for you to engage directly with others who are also on the call from all over the world. And we're using a beautiful, brand new technology called Maestro Conference. And with Maestro Conference, we can meet together as a group on the phone, and then we can break out into smaller discussion groups to engage more intimately with each other. So if you're interested in joining us today for that call immediately following this one, you just go to your inbox for your emails, look for the email that we've sent you, and just click on the link to register yourself for that call. So this evening, I am so thrilled and honored to be here with an amazing luminary, a reverend, an author, a dynamic, inspirational speaker, August Gold, to engage today's topic, Answering the Call, Life is Talking, Are You Listening? August Gold is a nationally recognized inspirational speaker. She's frequently a keynote speaker at conferences all around the nation. She is a preeminent teacher of stories of soul work of the Tao Te Ching. She founded Sacred Center New York on 9/9/01 and has served as its spiritual director for more than 8 years. August is the author of 9 books, including The Prayer Chest, Thank You, God, for Everything, and the award-winning children's book, Where Does God Live?, and the forthcoming Prayer Partners. And the thing that I really love about August is that she is a woman of such audacity and courage. This is a woman who understands what it is to live on the edge of her own evolution, and she is fearless about taking huge risks in order to bring forth the greatest and the best that she has to offer life. She is a tireless servant to the evolutionary impulse of life, and she is ever stretching herself to walk or talk and live from her own knowing, even when her knowing is leading her in a direction that many other people would shy away from and talk themselves out of. So August is really a fearless leader and has well earned her seat with us tonight. I'm delighted to be sitting at her feet and learning with all of you, and very, very excited, August, to welcome you to Women on the Edge of Evolution.
Thank you so much. That was overwhelming.
It was true, every word of it.
Well, your listeners will see if it's true. Let them; they will decide for themselves.
Okay, great. Thank you. Of course.
Thank you so much, Catherine. What a wonderful invitation.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm really excited about the dialogue because you and I have spent some time together now, and I think that what you have to say is very, very relevant to what kind of this emerging theme has been in our series, which has to do with really being in this very alive and dynamic co-creative dance with the creative energies of life. And sometimes it's been spoken about as taking the very next step, or it's been spoken about as listening to your deeper knowing, or honoring the synchronicities and signs that we're receiving along the way. And so we're all here because we're interested, like deeply interested in co-creating the future in this very awake and conscious way, moving into a world-centric perspective, taking on the co-creation of our world together, which seems like an awfully big project to be taking on together here.
No kidding.
But I'm really hearing, August, that you are such a master teacher because it's so integral to how you live your life and how you've really generated so much contribution to the world. So I'm wondering if you can just start us off tonight by really sharing what you mean by answering the call and that life is talking. Are we listening?
I'd love to. I think, and the way you explain it, that it makes it sound very overwhelming to most people, the idea of co-creating with life or with God, the evolutionary changes that are to come moment by moment. And there's an old saying that says, when you try and do God's work without God, it's very exhausting. And if you change
wow.
the word God out, if you have charge around the word God and you replace it with the word that really is a true word, which is life, with the initial cap L, or as the Tao Te Ching calls it, the Tao, when you know that life is in constant conversation with you, that it wouldn't even think of bringing you something or asking something of you without giving you all the tools, all the information, and all the dialogue you need at all times to do whatever work is here for you to do, your work, then you know you're not in this all by yourself. Then it's not overwhelming. But, of course, nobody actually teaches us that life is in conversation with us constantly. We have some references to a still small voice, but we have never been taught that life is always in conversation with us, and our job is to learn its language. Because when we do, we then move forward with all of the assistance and all of the support we need. Otherwise, we're paralyzed because there's just so much to do, and where do we begin? And it is so much work that one person couldn't possibly undertake it.
Right.
But in conversation with life, you are on a daily basis, moment to moment, being talked to. to, with life, by life. And look at this marvelous saying from the Tao Te Ching, which is 81 verses, very simple philosophy, Taoist philosophy of life, 81 verses, some of the verses that are a sentence long. It says that all of life is a movement toward our perfection, meaning the Greek root of the word perfection, wholeness. All of life is a movement. It's moving us. It's always moving us into our next step of our evolution. That's life's job. Our job is to participate in it, in that conversation. So we don't even have to think it up. We don't have to even figure it out. And that takes a load off, I think.
I think so, too. I'm so relieved.
Relieved, right?
But can you what do you mean by life's language, August? That life is speaking, it has its own language, and we have to understand life's language. What does that mean? What are we listening for?
We're listening for every single thing that shows up on our doorstep, in our life, in our face, every moment. Our life. Oftentimes we think that life is going to talk to us, or the divine is going to talk to us, or spirit will talk to us through special religious symbols. And my experience is that life talks to us through life. It's so simple. Whatever's on your doorstep, the call that comes in, the neighbor that shows up at your door, the doctor that gives you a prescription, your boss, your you know, crazy in-laws, whatever it might be, every experience that happens to you is life speaking to you personally and directly. That's the conversation. It's right in front of you at all times. It's not more special than that. It doesn't happen on Mount Sinai in the Middle East. It happens right in your house, in your family, with everything that's happening to you. That's the dialogue.
Wow. Okay. So you're talking about this very evolutionary way of being in relationship to everything that's occurring.
Yes. Now, here's the catch. To everything that is occurring, there is an old Buddhist story about this wise woman who lived in a town far away, and this man lived a very unhappy life. So he decided, in his great unhappiness, he was going to travel far, far away to see this wise woman named Sono, sit at her feet, and find out what the secret of happiness was. He makes his way to her, and I'll make a long story short, he makes his way to her. He sits down, he says, I am unhappy, I'm a bitter man, I'm a jealous man, I'm a frightened man and fearful man. What should I do? I have people I don't like, I have people I resent. The list goes on for what's not working in his life. She turns to him, she says, I know exactly what you need to do. You need to say these words, thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. So he goes away. A year later, he comes back. He sits at her feet. He says, I am more miserable than I was before. I am more jealous, more angry. People are driving me even crazier than they did before. I can't believe I'm here. I'm just as mad as heck. I can't believe it. She sits a while. She looks at him. She goes, ah, yes. She goes, okay, I know exactly what you need to do. You need to say, thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever, right? Pema Chodron, the genius Buddhist living monk who is living amongst us, she's just such a bright light. She says it this way, whatever comes to your door, you say these words, I agree. And what is she saying? She's saying what the old story says, which is you must welcome everything. Because you know our tendency is to open the door to beautiful things, to a bouquet of roses and somebody telling you how wonderful you are and your student's an honor student in school. But we close the door when what's on the other side of the door is a prescription for drugs because we have an illness, or our student has flunked a class, or our car just got crashed, or something tragic has happened. Mm-hmm. And what we are told is life is in constant conversation with us constantly, not a moment, without fail, it is always speaking. our job is to keep the door open to every conversation that life wants to have with us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that's a fine how do you do, right?
Right.
That's hard to do.
Absolutely. But
come
I know on. That you live this way. I know that you live this way. And I'm wondering if you can share some examples of this from your own personal experience so people really have a tangible sense of what you're talking about, it because it's so critical, this perspective.
Well, okay, good example then.
Yeah.
I had years ago, very, very early in my ministry, because, you know, early in your ministry, you're thinking I'm doing all the right things and all right things should happen and good things, only good things should happen because, of course, I'm a minister doing good things for people.
Of course.
Right.
Makes sense to me.
Right?
But I think, you know, and it's interesting, I just want to say, I think a lot of us as women have that perspective. That if we're good, then good things should come to us. I think this is really for women in particular because we're so trained to be good girls that we're going to be rewarded by life. So what you're saying is very relevant to women.
Very much makes sense.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you wake up one morning and you find out that not only do you have fibroids, but you have fibroids that are bleeding? So I woke up one morning, that is exactly what I discovered that I had out of the clear blue sky, and I made my first appointment with a doctor, and I said, and it was a surgeon, I said, what should I do? And he said, to the best of his ability, I'm not knocking surgeons, I'm just saying, to the best of his ability, he said, look, if you don't plan to have children, I think the best thing for you to do would be to have a hysterectomy. I thought that was way too extreme for me.
Wow.
And I went home that day because I was just 10 years on this path. That's all. My path had started at 22 when I had a spiritual awakening. So in those few years, that decade, I had learned enough to say, you know what, maybe there is another way. And that's when the conversation started beginning. And what I did was I went home. And I began to ask a different question, not what is wrong with this picture, because anybody could see what's wrong. I was sick, something was wrong with me, and a doctor wanted to cut it out. Nobody would disagree that something was wrong. But I asked a different question that enabled me to use to answer the question from a deeper place within myself. Not my human eyes, because everybody's got a set of those, and the human eyes can always see very accurately what's wrong on the surface. In order to find out the deeper place, and I go back to the Tao that said, all of life is a movement toward our perfection. That's verse 29. Mm-hmm. Verse 6 says it another way. Without fail, it says, she, Anishkap S, so she, life, brings us to our own perfection, meaning without fail, we're going to be led to a place where we are in our completeness, in our wholeness, in our greatness, what the Tao calls our perfection. In order to find out what is our perfection, we have to ask not what is right here, but what is perfect here. And man, if there isn't a crazier question at a moment like this when something is so wrong, I don't know what it is. It's almost counterintuitive to say what is perfect here. But when you ask what is perfect here instead of what is wrong here, by default, you are trading out your human eyes, which are very helpful for human things, for your deeper eyes, the eyes of your soul, the eyes of your heart, the eyes of your deeper wisdom, the eyes of your intuition. And when you ask what is perfect here, that place within you begins to show you something extravagant, which is, not what's happening to you, but what's happening for you.
Mm.
And I sat down and I asked that question, what is perfect here? And I picked up a pen because I do better when I just put something down on the paper than letting it run through my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that came out of my pen, and there's nothing special about me that makes me more spiritual than the next person, I just asked that question. And this is exactly what came out 20 years later. I remember it like it was this morning. What came out on the paper was, do not call me by that name, fibroids. Call me by my true name. And my true name is Little Pockets of hate.
Wow.
Right?
Had you ever had that thought before?
Oh, please. I was a minister. I had done my forgiveness work.
Wow.
I didn't hate anybody. I was an excellent forgiveness person. I taught forgiveness.
I have a degree in forgiveness.
I have a degree in precisely. I was shocked. Shocked.
Wow.
Speechless. Which if you knew me, you would know how shocking that was. And you know what? It was so true. Because when we hide something away that is not appropriate for us to feel, and you had said it yourself, and you're right, as women, we learn what is not appropriate to express or to feel or to have resentments or anger, especially maybe at parents who had done their best and tried their hardest. You put it away, you hide it away within yourself, and you hide it so well. We're so good at hiding that we hide it from ourselves and we forget all about it. Now, here's the genius of life. When the moment comes when we can't go on carrying something in hiding from our own selves, life in its conversation will bring something to the forefront, and it looks like something bad or terrible or tragic or dark, when in fact, dark or light or heavy or bright, whatever it might be, it is nothing more than a conversation about something within ourselves that needs to be brought to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And how else can it get our attention except to knock on the front door and say, here's something you need to look at. Mm-hmm. Isn't that beautiful?
That's just exquisite.
Ah.
And you know what I'm noticing as you're sharing about this, really tuning into life's language and being able to pull out the golden nuggets here from what's occurring, that points the way towards our greatest growth and evolution. It's actually literally a shift in orientation to how we're relating to life, because so many of us are kind of inside of an orientation of, am I getting what I want here?
Uh-huh.
Right? So we're actually relating to the circumstances. Is this what I want or this is what I don't want? And I think it's a shift in orientation to really listening to life from the perspective of being committed to our growth and our liberation, really from the patterns of the past or the consciousness, to be engaging actively with the intention of waking up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And really becoming the fullness of who we are. And the other thing I really heard is that it's very critical to ask the right questions.
Yeah.
Right? Like when you had that illness, many of us might have asked the question, why me? What did I do wrong?
All of us would probably.
Right? Or how do, you know, right, all of us. Right, why me? Why is this happening to me? What am I doing wrong? How come God doesn't love me?
Mm-hmm.
Right, all of those things. And I think that sometimes being able to ask the right question, and I'm just noticing you sat down and you took a pen to hand, and I'm just wondering what was the question you were inside of that opened up that golden nugget of clarity about yourself.
Well, the question was the crazy question that nobody thinks to ask, because with our human eyes it seems there is no answer with our human eyes. When we ask what is perfect here, and I go back to the Tao Te Ching because it uses the word in two different verses that we are being moved. Life is a movement toward our perfection. And again, it says life brings us to our own perfection. Life brings it to us. Whether we want it or not, it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
What by asking the question, what is perfect here, what we're really doing is aligning with the truth about what life's will is for us. See, the old-fashioned notion of God's will, and I use God and life and Tao interchangeably. You could put in any word you want. It really doesn't make a difference. What we're talking about is that energetic field of dynamic potential that's alive in every moment, responsive to our every thought and breath and movement. And when we recognize what God's will is, the old-fashioned notion is God's will is we should be nice people, we should tithe to our synagogues and churches, we should do good works. That's the old-fashioned God of our youth. In the superficial sense, we should do good things and be good people. But when we become, when we go a little bit deeper on the path, when we become more mature in our spirituality, what we understand is that life's will, God's will, is not that we become a certain type of person, but that we become the person we were born to become. Not like anybody else, but like the imprint of who we were born to be, that only we can be. And if we're not that person, nobody else on earth can be.
Oh, there you have it. That each of us has gifts and greatness that only we can bring to the table, and that the world will never see again after we are gone. It's so critical what you're talking about. And August, I also know that there's this other piece to it, which has to do with navigating life inside of this dynamic relationship. So you're listening, but I know you well enough now to know that there's also a way that you're receiving a lot of guidance on what there is to do next, on this next step part. Can you talk about that and how critical that's been in your own unfolding and becoming?
Well, this is still part of the same thing,
okay,
which is being in conversation. Because many of us think, yeah, well, how will I know what that purpose is for me? How am I going to know? That's good for you, but how will I know what life's will is for me, its intention is for me? And I go back to the same thing. In each moment, everything that comes to your door, every conversation, every deep feeling you have is going to lead you there. Now, of course, we live in a world, most of us, from the neck up. So we read 1,000 books. Many of us have degrees, so we read 10,000 books. And we have so much information in our mind conceptually, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to have this information. That's correct. The problem is all that information resides upstairs from the neck up, in the attic, as it were. None of it comes downstairs beneath that neckline, the continental divide, into our body. Beneath the continental divide where our neck is, downstairs in our body is the place where we can feel this relationship with life. It is not something we're going to know in our head. It's something we're going to feel in our body. And it is no different, this relationship with life or this relationship with God, than a relationship with a man that you love or a woman that you love. It's not something you know. It's something you feel. It's palpable. So a lot of the work that I do and I help women do and men do is get down out of their heads into their bodies where they can feel a relationship happening. Because this intuitive sense of ours, this still, small voice, and that's what the Bible calls it, and it's very accurate. It's a voice, it's a feeling, it's a sensation, it's a compelling urge that moves us to the left or the right based on how we feel led. And if we are not in our bodies, we can't feel it.
Right.
Conversation with life is a relationship with life. So, example, I was running an extremely successful class downstairs in somebody else's church space on Sunday morning at 9:30. Talk about the kiss of death time in a neighborhood in New York that, my God, the guys weren't even coming home from the bars at the time
that
was starting in the morning. And I started this class, and I called it the class of deeper teachings, unleashing your divine potential, and all conventional wisdom said you're going to have 25 people. That's what the minister said. You're going to have 25 people. And you know, if you take a collection basket, you're going to have, you know, $25. And I said, that's okay. I need to teach. And you as a teacher know you got to teach what you got to teach, whether the room is empty or full.
Absolutely. That's the calling.
Right?
Yeah.
And if the room's empty, it's embarrassing. You're laughing at your own jokes, but you still got to do it anyway.
Exactly.
So, meantime, 3 years later, there were 250 people. It was 100 people over the fire code. We had a bouncer, a woman who was the VP at Chase Manhattan Bank. You got to love it. A beautiful 60-year-old woman who was our bouncer.
Oh, and we had
a sign up that said sold out. It was a mob scene, as successful as you could hope it would be. And one day I got an email. Egos were ruffled. I got an email saying the class is canceled as of this very second. An email.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay? Now, to all eyes, and once again, look what happened to me. You know how fast I could have made 20 calls and enrolled 20 people, and look what happened to me, and I can't believe this happened, and what a bum, and I can't believe it. 20 people would have taken my side in a minute, and I could have fought to have that be my place if I made a big enough stink. However, life is always in conversation with us. Without fail, she brings us to our perfection. And look what that says, without fail. That means without a single exception, which means if I'm being fired, if I have fibroids, if something goes wrong, if something seems tragic, it is still life bringing me to my perfection. Now, I went home. 48 hours, I was up at a Buddhist monastery, not because I wanted to be, but I had contracted to teach a class up there on that particular day. At that moment, I had felt I had nothing to teach. But on that evening, in this Buddhist monastery where I had contracted to teach, I felt a compelling urge, a call within myself. It's a feeling. It's an urge. It's a voice. It's a rush. And here is exactly what it said. You need, and this is mid-July 2001, you need to open a church in New York City on 9901. And keep in mind, I was living in East Hampton 3 hours outside of New York City at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's exactly the message. You need to open a church in, and it was a church, and it was in New York City, and it was on 9901. Now,
the other thing is that you never really wanted to open a church, did you?
No. No.
By the way,
that's a little aside.
Okay.
No, I'm a Jewish girl, for God's sake.
Okay.
And then I followed this path that led me into the ministry, and then it led me to open a church to add insult to injury.
Oh, my gosh.
See, that's the thing about the call. You're so good to call that. You really are. Because the call doesn't take you in the direction that you most expect it to. It takes you in the direction that you were born to go in. And we are so much more than we even dream ourselves to be. That when the call comes and says, do this, we say, you got to be kidding. That's not me. I couldn't possibly. I'm not worthy. I'm not deserving. We have a laundry list of things to talk ourselves out of it. Because it doesn't look like we think it should.
Right.
Because it's not our human self designing it with a career strategy in mind. It's our destiny calling.
Yes.
And it's a place that only we can fill. That's why it looks so different.
Beautiful. And for those who have not put two and two together, 9901 in New York City was 2 days before the terrorist attack in New York, right?
Yep.
So you get this message, 9901, and what did you, how did you respond to that?
Well, I would so love to say to your listeners and to you, sweetie, I would so love to say, oh, my God, in that minute, it was the biggest yes that I have ever said. You know, my yeses, I've learned, my yeses have got stronger over time because of this saying, which is completely true, and I'm the poster child for this saying. Life leads those who will and those who won't. It drags. So when you get dragged around long enough by thinking your destiny is optional, you finally wake up and say, you know what? The easiest way is just going to be to say yes right now, because I'm going to have to say yes anyway. So I said yes with so many conditions, because, of course, I had a church before this. And I had a church before this that I was asked to open only as a deal that I made with life, which was, take this phobia off my back. And it was a full-blown phobia with mice that absolutely consumed me daily. I lived a functional life, and inside of me I was consumed with a phobia that grew each day. And on the night that I literally asked life, I entered the conversation instead of running away from the phobia and hating it and asking hypnotists to get it out of me and meditating and praying, please shrink this phobia. I finally entered the conversation, and I said, whatever it is that life wants me to do, I'll do it. Because I knew there was something that I had to do that I wasn't doing. That was the only thing that was left to do. The next day, and I mean the next day at lunch in Mayrose on Broadway and 20th Street in New York, my supervisor of volunteers, I volunteered at the Gay Men's Health Crisis, he came, sat down, we had lunch, as we'd had so many times before, and he said, August, you need to open a church.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe he said something so bizarre.
Oh,
and you know what? That was exactly what I had been withholding. Now, fast forward, I'm sorry for the long answer, but if you knew me, I am the long answer person. It's a good story.
It's such a great story. We're
fast
learning.
Fast forward, you asked, did I say yes? I said yes with dragging my feet. I can't believe you're asking me to do a church again. I made it so clear I don't want to do a church. I'll do it because you ask me, but I'm not going to do it with a happy heart. Now, in the Buddhist monastery, all of the students and the teachers were in the Buddhist main hall where they slept. I, because I was a teacher there, a special guest teacher, they put me in an outdoor in the woods cabin to myself. That night that the call came and I half-heartedly said, I will do it, I went back to my cabin. It was 11 o'clock at night. I opened the door, and I swear to you, I swear, I've had laser surgery on one eye only, not both, one. I opened the door, and with my one laser bionic eye, I saw across the room on the countertop in the kitchen, in my cabin, a mouse turd. Right?
Mm-hmm.
At 20 feet. And anybody who's had a phobia with mice knows that you can recognize a mouse turd. You can recognize it on the other side of the room. And I am telling you, in that moment, I knew what the message was. I felt the phobia returning to me as if it had multiplied by 100. And the message was, there is no option. Destiny is not optional. And when I felt that all-consuming phobia, I understood that saying yes to this message was not optional. I woke up the next morning, called 6 colleagues, and 6 weeks later, we had put together the musicians, the bookstore, the hall, the space, and the money, and had our doors open. But it wasn't until 48 hours later that we understood why.
Oh, my gosh.
Why is this important to say? Because nobody answers the call in a beautiful, fabulous, saintly fashion. Mm-hmm. We all kind of get bent out of shape, and it's like, oh, my God, that's not exactly what I had in mind, and this is not my timing, and I can't believe it. But the fact is, everything goes away when you get to the yes. And as you get more experienced at answering the call, the yes comes sooner, and the arguing gets lesser. But nobody does it perfectly and beautifully. That's only for the books.
And I so appreciate your authenticity about that, you know, because it's not easy for any of us to take these kinds of risks that our intuitive knowing is demanding of us, or to you know, to give the things up, the safety, the security, the looking good, the certainty, all of those things have to go.
They do.
And to be able to prioritize the fulfillment of our own destiny and be willing to act on that knowing is very courageous.
It is. And yet I would not necessarily, when you did the introduction, I would not say, oh, God, I was blushing. None of those things feel real because I feel what it feels like to be in the inside of wrestling with the calls when they come, because you're literally moving outside your comfort zone. A career move is a move inside your comfort zone. A move in your destiny, answering the call, is right outside your comfort zone. That's the problem with it. Otherwise, we'd all be doing it, wouldn't we?
Exactly. Right. Well, and I'm kind of even hearing some of the people on the call right now saying, but she seems so certain of the instructions. How can I know it's not just me making this up or my imagination or the voice of fear or what I want to hear so much? Like, how do I know that it's actually this voice that's moving me in the direction of destiny in a way that would allow me to make that choice?
Well, if that question is being asked because somebody really wants to know what to do, I can tell them exactly where to begin if they're interested in taking the first step into answering their own call and to hearing it. And there's something so simple they can do. And I invite people to understand it's going to sound so simple that there's a part of you that's going to laugh it off and say, oh, please, this is so unsophisticated. This is hardly what I had in mind. And I'm telling you, the truth is completely unsophisticated. It is so simple, we gloss over it because we think there's something more complex waiting. And the truth is so simple. Here's what you do. Every morning when you wake up, and in Buddhism they call it demonstrating your willingness, meaning the first thing you do when you wake up is you demonstrate your willingness to make entering this conversation, learning life's language, and you learn it by turning within yourself, by making this a priority in your day. Instead of putting it at the end of your day or at lunch or when you have a moment in between your busy life, you put it first. And it's amazing. All 12-step programs, all religious and philosophical programs will tell you, you want to change anything? Take 90 days and do it in the morning. Make it a priority. You wake up, and the first thing you do is you do what I call a 5-5-5 morning practice. Literally, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, and 5 minutes. And I warned you, you know, and I warned your listeners when they're saying, oh, please, this is where you're going to hear, oh, please. 5 minutes of reading, and not the Financial Times or the New York Times or the journals, nothing. You're taking 5 minutes. And you're not reading the news of the world. You are reading a book of truth, a book of higher truth, whatever that is for you, in Ernest Holmes, a book by Marianne Williamson, a book by Deepak Chopra, a book by Pema Chodron, whatever it might be. 5 minutes, you're feeding your mind on its highest thought. The next 5 minutes, you pick up a pen. You don't have to be a writer, and you simply pour on the page, you're spilling on the page, what you're carrying in your heart, what you're feeling, what you're thinking. Does it make a difference? Not a to-do list. It is what you are feeling inside. You pour it on the page, 5 minutes. Last 5 minutes, you sit. We don't even call it meditating. Meditating has all this charge around it. You're sitting, and you can't kind of sit badly. You're just sitting. You sit either in silence, or you sit, you put some instrumental music on, or you sit and you take a prayer or a statement of truth and you sit with it 5 minutes. And literally what you are doing is you are declaring that this conversation with life that you can understand once you begin to invoke it from within is something that's so important to you that you're putting it first in your day. And the Course in Miracles has a phrase, and I love it because it shows me when I'm really serious, I use these words. Above all else, it says, above all else, I want to see this differently. And by doing this for 90 days in the morning, you are literally putting some muscle on that still small voice, on those deeper eyes, on that deeper knowing that already knows why things are happening for you and how to respond appropriately. So you're not getting rid of your human voice. We don't get rid of any part of our nature. We just build up the higher part of our nature to eclipse it. It still exists. Our human self that says, my God, why is this happening for me and every to me and everything is a 911 to it. We don't kill it. We simply overpower it by strengthening the voice that says, it's not happening to you, sweetie. It's happening for you, and let me show you how. So that we begin to respond to the world's events, all of them, personally, professionally, and in our nation, in our community, in our world, no longer as a 911, but as a 411, as a piece of information that is brought to us for us to grow ourselves into being able to do something about.
Beautiful. I'm so inspired listening to you, as I know a lot of the listeners are as well. And I'm really hearing the essence of what you're talking about. The way I might phrase it is just living in this constant state of deep listening and receptivity.
Yeah, that's well put.
And you know, one of the things we talk about in our teaching, Claire and I created this teaching, Feminine Power, and it really has to do with the evolution of this idea of the feminine being in a state of surrender, from away from the old model of we're going to surrender ourselves to a man, right, into living in a state of surrender with this force and field of life that's greater than ourselves.
Oh, boy. To life itself?
To life itself. And I'm just hearing this beautiful relationship, August, that you have with life, even when you're arguing with life. No, I can't do that. That doesn't make any sense, right? Which we do. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the commitment that you have is to live in a state of deep surrender.
And it's a commitment. Dig this. I found that wise people don't get wise because of their wisdom. They become wise because they're tired of being beaten up and punched around by life.
They're tired of being unwise.
They're tired of being unwise. 5 years ago, did I not get hit by a red delivery truck crossing the street on the Upper East Side of New York on the green with 24 other people? And out of all the 24 other people on the green light walking with everybody else legally, I get hit by the truck.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is to say, what's so fascinating is that when we understand that without fail she brings us to our own perfection, we can begin to do something that is so extraordinary and atypical for human beings, which is to welcome everything as a piece of the answer to our prayer. And our prayer, our deepest prayer, is always, how may I be all that I may be? Which is the answer to life's prayer, which is why we were created. How may I help you be all you may be? So that the life I created you to be, you can give back to life itself. That's the deal, because nobody gets off scot-free in life. Everybody's got to pay the price of life and of giving back to life. And that's not a spiritual principle. That's just a deal. It's good, a good business deal. Life creates us, and what it asks in return is that we bring more life from the life we were given. It's a fair deal. When we're withholding out of fear, out of terror, out of panic, and that's my problem with the living right now in this world where everything's a 911, everything is an emergency. We get so panicked, we get so nervous, we get so scared, we shut down. We don't get responsive and wise when everything is around us as an emergency. We panic and we shut down and literally we become paralyzed. When we understand that inside the 911s, that each 911 that's coming is actually a 411, a piece of information that life is bringing to us to grow us. And why grow us? Because when we grow even a tiny bit, take a little bit of ourselves out of hiding, which is all life asks, one step at a time, to be less afraid, to come out a little more, to speak our truth, to speak up, to be something more, to take that chance. Each time we do that, we're expressing more life. And that's all that life is asking, to express more of that life. But what the emergencies of the world tell us is that we must run in all directions simultaneously, putting out fires. And what life is telling us is a little bit different. For 90 days, I have people do the 5, 5, and 5, and I have them do something very unpopular. I have them turn off their televisions and put down the newspapers. And of everything I've ever asked students to do in 20 years of teaching, this makes me the least popular person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear is I will be out of touch with the important news of the world. And the truth is you got to hear your own voice first. Because if you don't, you will not know which 911 has your name on it.
Wow.
And if we don't, we're answering all the calls ineffectively, but not answering the one call that we were born to answer, because we are hysterically trying to save a world that is at this moment trying to talk to us about where our place is.
Mm.
One of these 911s is ours, but we don't know because we don't know its language. 90 days, no TV, no magazines, and no internet except for work when you need it. There is no more powerful exercise I have ever given my students in 2 decades than that one, coupled with the 5, 5, and 5 for finding your own voice. And your voice, of course, is the voice of life talking to you.
Mm-hmm. So
right? Now nobody's going to, I probably lost like calls. Probably have all those red lights disappeared now.
No, because the women who are gathering on this call are really serious about realizing their greater potentials. I think all of us realize that we're living at an unprecedented time in the course of human history. Where something really big needs to wake up, and it needs to come through us. This whole conversation about the return of the feminine, you know, is not like an external energy that's going to descend on us. It's going to come through all of us.
Bravo.
Because we rise to the occasion of what it is to be a woman of privilege who can.
Mm.
We have the education. We have access to power. We have the freedom. We have the leverage. Many women in our world don't, and we recognize this sacred obligation. So we're sitting here listening deeply. I can feel everyone really listening, because so many of the things that what people are struggling for is, well, what's mine to do? I want to do. I want to participate in the evolution of consciousness and culture. I want to co-create the future of our world with consciousness and be able to cause deeper levels of heart and well-being for everyone on the planet.
Yeah.
What can I do?
Well, you know what's interesting about answering the call? When you take it this way, you slow down a little, even though the world is telling you the world's coming to an end, and that's what everybody's saying, and so it makes us feel that we have to do something this instant. When you slow it down and take the 90 days, the first thing I was told in my 90 days, and look how this has nothing to do with the world at large, and it has everything to do with the world at large, I was told to put down cigarettes. I was a 3-pack-a-day smoker for 7 years. And the first thing I was told to do was not put down cigarettes, put down the smoke screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a smoke screen between me and life so that I didn't have to be seen for who I was. because perhaps who I was wouldn't be good enough for other people if they really saw who I was. And the first thing I had to do was put down the smokescreen. Don't you know that a year later, I was in the ministry?
Wow.
Because the smokescreen we have up, the addictions we have between ourselves and other people to stay hidden, is the very thing that keeps us hidden from our own selves.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing the voice begins to tell us in answering our call, and this is another reason why answering the call is so troubling, because it tells us to look in the mirror and put down the very hiding places that have kept us safe. And what is an addiction if not a hiding place?
Mm-hmm.
It told me to come out of hiding. And I said, oh, excuse me, I'm not in hiding. Look at me. I'm a professional. I have an MA. I'm in training and development. And it said, yeah, look at you. You've been hiding in cigarettes for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with turning within and letting life talk to you, because it is going to bring you to the place where you have been hiding safely for years that is no longer safe for you to hide.
And, of course, then we have to talk about what would compel us to have that kind of courage. So if you were going to really look, you and I were speaking before, August, a little bit about what's really at stake here in really taking on our lives in this way. And we were talking about this understanding that to the extent that you and I and all of us on this call are not becoming ourselves fully and not realizing our highest potentials, that that's the extent that we as a human society are not realizing our potentials.
That's so true. That's so true. They're one and the same.
So much is at stake right now.
Well, how much is at stake? Here is the thing with answering the call. If you had not answered your call to do this, would we all be on the phone listening to you?
Exactly.
Would we all be on the phone beginning to have the seeds planted in our own fertile imagination of what might be possible for me, greater than I could ever imagine, had we not heard it, let's say, from a woman like you and from a woman like Claire, who put your minds together to come up with a way to say it and to present it in a way that was the only way we could hear it. If we don't do what we are destined to do, all of the people, the community, the family and the nation around us, nationally and internationally, the people who are touched by it don't get touched.
That's right.
They don't. Mm-hmm. And the thing about answering a call, and we were talking about this earlier, that is the hardest part, is that when the call comes, and it is not a big crashing cymbal, it is a compelling urge, it is a feeling, it is a inner voice, a leaning within, we have a window of opportunity, and it's a small window of opportunity where all of the universe conspires to help you. Joseph Campbell said it gorgeously. He said, 1,000 invisible hands come to help you. The Tao Te Ching says it another way when it talks about the dark spirits. Even the darkness rushes in to sweep your path. That's how much life at the moment of that window of opportunity helps you. Why? Because it needs you.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs you. And if you don't walk forward, take one step, and keep in mind, you're not doing it alone. Life is doing it with you, helping you, guiding you, nurturing you every step of the way when you enter the conversation. If you don't, nobody else can. That's the problem with destiny. Anybody can fill your career position. Nobody can do what you do when it comes to your destiny. That's the piece you're talking about.
Right.
Something doesn't happen because you didn't take that step.
And didn't take it in a timely way.
Timely.
Because that's what I heard on your story. You know, it was unreasonable that you would open a church in 6 weeks in New York City. That was an unreasonable request from the universe. And yet
Thank you, by the way. That feels good to hear.
But you said okay.
Yeah.
And you did it, and you put one foot in front of the other. And I'm sure you had a lot of synchronicity, magic, and miracles, and people showed up, and it all just kind of unfolded inside of that level of willingness. And I'm wanting to just point out to everybody, too, that there are these openings, and we have to take them when they're there. and that that's what keeps life so alive and dynamic, and that's what keeps us juiced up and on the path and inspired and lit up.
It's so true.
We say no and hesitate and talk ourselves out of it and get small and contracted and hesitate that the moment can pass. And sometimes it can take a long time for the universe to reorganize itself to create that kind of an opening again. So, August, I am completely inspired. I want to open the call up to give everyone else an opportunity to talk to you, too. And we're going to take questions now. So I want to just give some instructions on how people can jump into the conversation. If you have a question for August, I want to invite you to send your question via the instant message in the teleseminar window on your computer. Or you can dial into the conference line, and if you're on the conference line now, you press *2 to let us know that you have a question. And before we take questions, I just want to tell you about a couple of things. First of all, how can you find August Gold? You can go to August's website, which is augustgold.net, and on the website, August has a free audio talk, a very inspiring talk called A Hero's Journey. And so to go there, you just go to augustgold.net and click on Hear August Gold. So it's free, it's uplifting, as you can tell from being with August right now. And August, can you just say something about the talk that people are going to hear if they go to listen to A Hero's Journey?
Yeah, I would say it fits in perfectly with the discussion we're having today, which is moving from the smaller pot, when you move a plant in your house from a smaller pot to a larger pot, you don't have any of the concerns about moving it. You know that if you don't move the smaller plant out of the smaller pot into a larger one, eventually it will become root-bound and it will die because it cannot move, its roots cannot get the nutrients it needs. So we don't think twice about it. When we move from the smaller pot, there is so much angst about it, and yet our human nature is no different than nature itself, which means when we have outgrown our smaller pot, our smaller relationship, our smaller job, our smaller way of thinking, life itself comes and lifts us out of the small pot and moves us, or attempts to that larger pot. Where we get freaked out is sometimes the thought of moving, and the thought of being potless, so that there's going to be a point where we're going from the old to the new, and there's no ground beneath us, and it feels like there's no net, and we're just hanging, and we are as unsafe as we could possibly be.
Right.
This talk is about how to negotiate moving from your smaller to your bigger pots, and there'll be more than one in your life, with some kind of modicum of faith and grace and dignity, because it's going to happen. It's going to happen. That's life's job, to move us to our next larger pot so we have more and more ability to have our true influence in this world.
Beautiful.
It's a cool talk. It's a very
cool. It sounds awesome. It sounds awesome, and you're speaking to that chasm that there is just no way around.
Let me have done it for them.
Yeah,
I had the red delivery truck. That was like such a far
out
west, man.
Wow.
You can't top that one. Red's my favorite color.
Oh, my gosh.
Right,
okay.
And a delivery truck, please. I mean, that was pathetic that I needed that lesson.
Oh, my gosh. So also, I want to let you guys know who live on the, right in New York City and the surrounding areas, that you can hear August on the first Wednesday of every month at the Ethical Culture Society at Central Park West and 64th Street, and that's only $10. What time is that talk, August?
The time is from 6 to 7. It's 1 hour. Very
one
small
hour.
Commitment. 1 hour, $10 on Central Park West and 64th
Beautiful.
Manhattan.
So fabulous. I'm very excited. You just started this last month. I'm very excited about that. So that's the Ethical Culture Society, Central Park West and 64th, the first Wednesday of every month at 6 o'clock.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. And for those of you who are new to our community and would like to find out more about our work, you can go to femininepower.com. And we have a free 75-minute audio called Awakening the New Feminine Power, How to Become Your Authentic Self and Co-Create the Future of Our World. So that's femininepower.com. And we also like to shine the light on the great and evolutionary offerings from some of our event partners and co-sponsors each week. We are very happy to tell you about our beloved co-sponsor, the Agape International Spiritual Center, that's founded by our dear friend and author of Spiritual Liberation, Michael Beckwith. The Agape International Spiritual Center is a trans-denominational spiritual community whose doors are open to all seekers in search of authentic spirituality, personal transformation, and selfless service to humankind. And you can now join the Agape community and hear Reverend Michael each Wednesday and Sunday by going to their website, www.agapelive.com, and signing up for the live streaming of their weekly sacred services. There's also a new free online teleseminar that is very similar to Women on the Edge of Evolution, but it includes men too. Want to invite you all to join 18 of today's most inspired spiritual luminaries for a groundbreaking conversation on how you can evolutionize your life and participate in co-creating the future. Presenters include Michael Beckwith, Deepak Chopra, Jean Houston, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Ken Wilber, Brian Swim, Michael Dowd, and Craig Hamilton. So you can visit evolutionaryspirituality.com to find out more about that series and to sign up. And our friends at Integral Enlightenment are very happy to announce the launch of their new online Academy for Evolutionaries. Registration is still open for their 9-week telecourse, Integral Enlightenment, Awakening to an Evolutionary Relationship to Life. The course starts this Saturday, in April, Saturday, April 17th. And you can learn more about that by downloading a free audio introduction at integralenlightenment.com/telecourse. Okay, great. So we are now going to open the call up for questions. So if you have a question for August Gold, I want to invite you to press star 2 on your keypad and wait until I call out your name or information. We get different kinds of information to identify you. Also want to invite you to submit a question via the instant teleseminar by going to the instant message window in the teleseminar series there. So let's go to someone in Cheshire, Connecticut. Hi, hello.
Hi, this is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. You're on with August and Catherine.
Hi, August. Hi, Catherine. This is a spectacular hour.
Oh, good.
I specifically wanted to know, it may sound like a silly question, but if in New York City, is that 6 a.m. or p.m.?
The city that never sleeps.
It's 6 p.m., 6 to 7 p.m. And it's in the Ethical Culture Society. They have a gorgeous concert hall, really stunning. So it's a beautiful surrounding, 6 p.m.
Is that on your website to participate in that? Just to
yes, it is.
Okay. And I just wanted to share with you that my favorite number is 5, always has been.
So you really liked her practice, the 5, 5, and 5.
Oh, the 5, 5, and 5.
I just did the 5-factor diet. I was just doing those exercises tonight. I was born 5/15/59. I'm, my 50th decade.
Well, the message is for you, Lisa. So you're going to take on the 5, 5, and 5 now, right?
Yes, I definitely am.
There you go.
And let me know how it goes.
I will.
Thank you, Lisa.
Cool. I just wanted to ask that one question and let somebody else get through.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Okay, great. I have another caller here that has no identifying factors here, so you're listed on your phone as anonymous. So if you're on the phone, just say hi.
Hi.
Hi, there you go. What's your name?
Ebony.
Ebony. Hi, Ebony. Okay, great.
Hi. How are you? Hi, August Gold. How do you feel?
I feel good, Ebony. Thank you for asking, darling.
It's good to hear your voice. I haven't seen you in a while.
Oh.
But I get your emails constantly. But I just have one question for you. I wanted to find out from you. I enjoyed your talk, as I always do, even when I come to hear you speak. I wanted to find out from you. Can you talk about the signs that the universe sends us when you get the calling?
Yes. What they might look like, you mean?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
This
I just
want to
get an idea.
It's a great question. The signs might look like your boyfriend breaks up with you. Your boss lays you off. Your apartment that you were subletting is now being renovated and you have to leave. Your doctor tells you that there's something wrong with you and they need to do more tests. It might look like something that your human eyes would tell you is not a good thing and you should shut the door on the news. And when news like that comes, we're told to do just the opposite. In the poem by D.H. Lawrence, which I love, the last three lines of his poem, The Song of a Man Who Has Come Through, says, "What is the knocking? What is the knocking at the door in the night? It's somebody who wants to do us harm? No, it is the three strange angels. Admit them. Whenever news comes into our life that surprises us or takes us aback, you could even call it your strange angel, because it is indeed an angel, but it's a strange one, because we expect our angels to be loving and kind and sweet and nice and come bearing bouquets of flowers. But what they come bearing is a surprising moment in time that makes us stop and pay attention. And in that moment, you know that life is calling you. And if you stop and take that breath and enter the conversation instead of bolt the door and go run hide in the closet, as most of us do, myself included, that's my past, we are entering the conversation with a strange angel, but an angel nonetheless. It looks like anything that surprises you, Ebony.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Thanks
Ebony
for calling
welcome.
In.
Okay, beautiful. Let's go to the instant questions coming in the teleseminar window. There's a woman I just want to acknowledge, Ante in Croatia, and welcome you, and thank you for being on the call, being with us in this inquiry. And Ante asks, how to create and apply knowledge to live love and freedom? So we have to remember probably English is not her first language. So how to create and apply knowledge. I think she's actually how to live in love and freedom is what she's asking, I think.
I think love and freedom are gorgeous concepts. And thank you for this question, because it really points to something important. We are surrounded by spiritual ideals that are so gorgeous. Unconditional love. How gorgeous is that? And yet I live with somebody. It's 18 years this weekend. It's 18 years we've been together. And I love this person so much, it's ridiculous how much mm-hmm. I love her. And yet, in this unconditional love, there's still some conditions. And I think sometimes, and the conditions being, if you start treating me poorly and start, you know, giving me trouble and you start making my life a misery and start pushing me down and start making me feel small, I'm going to think twice about whether I'm going to be able to be with you. So spiritual ideals like unconditional love and unconditional forgiveness, they're beautiful. But I think we need to take them out of the conceptual level and breathe them down into our bodies. And one of the things the morning practice does is it allows us day by day to find out what's going on inside of our own selves. Not with the concepts and the high ideas, which in our readings are beautiful and important to give us a vision, but in the part of our nature where our feet are on the ground, where we get to feel what it means to forgive. Because you know what? In the spiritual idea of forgiving the world, our body would actually point us first toward the places where we don't forgive ourselves. And that's where we begin to recognize when we take the morning practice and we take an idea, a beautiful idea, and we take it in, we sit with it, and we think about it, and we write about it, morning after morning. What begins to come up is love. Wow, I don't really love myself. Love, I haven't loved myself since I was a little girl. Love, there are places in myself I don't even like, let alone love. And what pours out on the page, what pours out in the morning, what spills out in the page is the reality of those beautiful spiritual ideals. And sometimes I think we feel if we're on a spiritual path, we must live up to all those ideals. And I think what life really asks us is no longer the old-fashioned idea of religion per se, which was, how do I be good? But rather, spirituality, that mature spirituality, deeper, asks us a very different question. It says, how do I be real? Because when I am real, then I am truly who I am. And then who I am has something to offer you that is real. Mm. And I think that's what you're speaking about. How do you bring it down into the real world and make it real for you? I would say that morning practice would be so elegant if you can find those 15 minutes in the morning to feel those concepts inside your body. And instead of perhaps looking at them and punishing yourself, sometimes as we do, for not being as high as those ideals, begin to allow yourself to be right where you are with them, mm-hmm. as perfectly imperfect as that might be. Then they become real. Love becomes real love, and freedom becomes real freedom.
Beautiful. Thank you, August, and thank you, Ante, for submitting that question.
Thank you, Ante, so much.
I also have a question from Caitlin in Washington. How do you ask the question, and she's got it in quotations, the right way when you're faced with something?
And I'm not sure there is a right way. I think there is a right question that allows the deeper part of you to answer, because the surface part of us, the human part of us, cannot answer the question, what is perfect here? Or the question, why is this happening for me? It's only one word different. Not why is this happening to me, which is obvious. Why is this happening for me? And the only way that makes it right, and I will tell you that's such an interesting question, how to ask it rightly, when you put the fire of desire behind any question you ask, sweetie, it's the right question. Because your heart, in its hunger and desire to know the deeper answer, not the surface answer, and you'll notice on television how often shows start, and on the radio, of course, on the radio talk shows, how often they start with who's to blame, as if that is a question that will lead to a deeper anything. If you're saying, how do I ask the question, take one of those two questions, what is perfect here, or why is this happening for me, and with all your heart, with a fire of desire in your heart, ask it. And I promise you, it cannot not be answered. And I'll take you back just one more moment to verse 6 of the Tao Te Ching and read you another line of it. Listen to her voice. Hear it echo through creation. Without fail, she reveals her presence. Without fail, she brings us to our own perfection. Meaning, if you ask the question with the fullness of your heart, that answer will be waiting for you, because that is what life waits for us to do, to engage, to enter that conversation.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Thank you for that. That's so helpful and clarifying. I want to also give Susan from Perth, Western Australia, an opportunity here to ask her question. Susan writes, I sometimes get frozen by fear. I recognize it. I know what it is. Can you please help me step past this without connecting in with it so that I can move forward.
Thank you for your honesty, Susan, in Perth, Australia, for saying what probably so many people are feeling as well. I will tell you two things that will be invaluable to you. I promise you this. One is turn off the television, turn off the internet, and turn off your reading of any magazines and newspapers for 90 days. You will not become ignorant of the world. Things will not happen that you needed to know because everybody around you is going to call you up and tell you what it was. And for 90 days, give yourself the gift of going on what the business world calls a low information diet. You're turning the volume down of the world. And here is what I've noticed, and I've been doing these particular classes for 11 years where I ask this on the first day of each class. The fear that people come into the class with, the palpable fear, lessens in proportion to the volume of the world they turn down until they can begin to access the voice within them that is greater than the fear around them. And I've got to go back to the Tao, and you'll have to forgive me for this, because the Tao Te Ching, to me, is simply and purely the most brilliant teaching I've ever encountered. It is that pure and real and true. And what it says in verse 72, line 1, when the people do not fear worldly power, a greater power will arise. If you turn down the volume of the world just for 90 days as an experiment, that's all. Not that we hide our head from the world, just so that we have a moment. We give ourselves a chance to access that still small voice, which is a smaller voice, and it needs a little bit more quiet to hear it. That greater voice will come from within you, and it will begin to help you face the fear in a different way. And here's the second thing I'll tell you. Each morning for 30 days, just for 30 days, take out a sheet of paper and let your fear have a voice. And man, this sounds like the exact opposite thing of what you should be doing, because the thing you want to do is to shrink its voice. But the truth is, if you want to shrink something, you got to let it grow. Let your fear have a voice, meaning put fear says on the top of the page and let fear have a voice. Let it tell you, you're going to be homeless, you're going to get sick, you're not going to find what you love, you're not going to get what you want. Everybody's got these fears. Let it rip. And then when it's done talking to you, when you're done letting it have its say, because that's what it wants, it wants you to enter the conversation with it, then tear up the sheet of paper and be done with it for that day. You will find by the end of the 30 days, as so many students do, that because you turn towards it, you enter the conversation, it no longer has to scream at you to get your attention. And by putting it on a sheet of paper and seeing it, you can actually distance yourself that breath from it and recognize it is not who you are, it is a portion of what you think and feel. That exercise is going to help you so much to lessen its paralyzing hold on you. And it's something, by the way, my dear, I do the same thing every time I am about to move to a bigger pot. I pull out a sheet of paper for a month and write down all of the things I'm afraid of about that bigger pot. I do the same thing to this day.
Beautiful. So helpful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. May I say one thing that might be of interest to everybody?
Yeah.
I have, and I realize I'm mentioning the Tao so much, I have to say this. I have on April 5th a introductory class for the Tao Te Ching that I'm offering here to my students in New York, but I thought I should really just open it up to everybody. It's just a free teleclass, one night only, an introduction to the Tao Te Ching. And I offer it from time to time throughout the year just to turn people on to how exceptional the teachings of the Tao is, to help you in understanding the bigger picture, the deeper picture of your life. So I wanted to let everybody know it's free. It's on April 5th. And I've quoted the Tao so much tonight, as it turns out. They might be interesting in going a little bit deeper into an introduction with the Tao.
So how would people find out and register for that?
They can just go to my website and just click on the class and write the Tao on it. So we just put them in that class. So simple.
Beautiful.
And free and easy. It's just for one night. It's 90 minutes.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your telling everybody about that. Thank you.
Oh, it'll be so exciting.
Let's take another caller here. I have Raina in California. Raina?
Hi.
Hi. Am I saying your name properly?
Yes, you are. I'm calling in the one belly class as well.
Oh, great. Thank you. It's so nice to have you. Hi.
Thank you so much, August. I have to say, I had goosebumps while you were talking, and usually when I have goosebumps, that means truth is coming through me, and I had so many goosebumps with you, I just can't believe it.
Thank you.
I am at the stage of my life where finding out my purpose is my priority.
Mm.
And I enrolled in that 10-day silent meditation. I don't know if you're aware of Vipassana at North Fork in California.
I'm not.
I am. I've certainly heard of it, of course, here in California.
I'm curious to know if that's something I can use in addition to the 555 practice to find out my purpose, because I really feel it's really important to me right now.
Oh, how beautiful. This is exactly the person you were talking about earlier.
Yes, exactly.
People who are so hungry and who recognize the importance of it, right?
And committed too, because that's a very intense practice, that 10-day practice. It's all in silence, isn't it, Raina?
It's very scary, actually. I have
many
my
hours a day.
I'm a physician, so I'll have my practice closed, and I'll go there and I'll just be silent and try to find out what it is that I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yes. And I would say, in addition to the 5, 5, and 5, anything that feels right to you is appropriate and is right for you. And I would also invite you to know, and this is how it works for me, and as I always say, I am no expert on any of these things. I find that when I do my sitting, when I go and I have a prayer closet in my house that literally is a closet, it's the size of a closet, and that's my prayer room that I go into,
okay.
Nothing much happens when I am sitting. Literally, nothing happens. However, when I've sat, I walk out into the world enlarged and receptive, and as Catherine said, surrendered and listening. And because I have sat, because you will be sitting with such a ferocity, when you go out into the world, you will be so open and receptive. You will literally be in receivership. Out in the world is where I would, if I were you, be watching and listening and feeling for what life is telling you and giving you, because it will probably be happening for you off the cushion, off the meditation cushion in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't be surprised or disappointed if after the 10 days nothing has transpired while you were sitting, but when you're back in life, you are so open to receive that is when you will be receptive enough to take it and enter the conversation with life off the cushion.
Thank you so much for this. Thank you so much for this. I was so worried they don't allow us to take paper and pen, and I was worried that I wouldn't be able to write down my message.
I swear to you, when it comes, you won't forget it. You won't miss it, darling.
Okay, Raina, thank you. Thank you,
Raina. That's very cute.
It's very dear. Okay, let's take another person here. I have Tyra. Tyra, is that correct?
It's Tyree.
Hi, Tyree.
Hi, everyone. It's
It's
a pleasure to be with everyone tonight and feel the amazing resonance in the field this evening.
Yeah.
So a question that I have for you, August, is could you expound upon, again, the necessity for us to be aware of our own perceptual filters via which we are receiving life's message, acknowledging that these lenses are a responsibility that's inherent in our role within the conversation.
excuse me for my ignorance. I'm not sure I understand. And that was a very excellent question. I'm not sure I understand what you're asking. Would you ask?
I might have a little bit of clarity if I can.
Please.
I think what Tyree is asking about has to do with the responsibility that we have to become very aware of our own consciousness and what we're bringing with us in terms of how we're filtering the information that's happening. So in other words, if I have a belief that I am alone and other people will always leave me, then maybe when, you know, I'm having a conflict with someone, there's a way that I'm filtering it as, okay, well, they're off and gone, and, you know, so I'm actually relating to life and then responding to life inside of that, because then maybe I'll leave the relationship because I'm assuming that it's over. Is that what you're talking about, Tyree?
It's pretty close, Catherine. Yeah, that's pretty descriptive.
Okay.
It gets there. It's acknowledging that as we are in that receptive mode, as we open to life and say yes to having the conversation, that the filters that we're receiving, that we're hearing through, that we're seeing through, that we're feeling through, have their own filters that, you know, and sometimes we call those perceptual filters.
I see.
And that to acknowledge those, and that there's almost an inherent responsibility to be aware of those as we're listening.
Oh,
you know, so it's almost activating that observer above the lenses. And I wanted to hear August speak at, you know, the necessity for us to step into that further, those of us that are actually engaged in this conversation daily with life.
Well, and you know what? And I totally get it. And thank you for the clarification, for taking the time, both of you, Tyree and Catherine, for helping to explain that. You are absolutely right. We can only take in as much as our perceptual filters will allow us to take in. Now, what is beautiful about what life does as we enter the conversation with it, literally enter it, turn toward it, or lean into it, is it begins to show us what parts of our perceptual filter are false, are old, are lacking, are broken, and in need of repair or replacement. And what is interesting is our job then in asking this question, and it's a very specific question, why is this happening for me? We cannot possibly get the answer to that question through our human perceptual filter. We can't. Because through our filter, every one of those things you mentioned, Catherine, will be engaged. Nobody likes me. I don't deserve it. This always happens to me. Men aren't true. My dad didn't like me. The whole laundry list of our human experience will emerge when we say, why did this happen to me? The moment we change that one word to why is this happening for me, knowing that all of life is a movement toward perfection. Whose perfection? My perfection. So all of life is geared to move me forward into my wholeness, means that there is a different place within me beneath the perceptual filters, and only that place that can answer that question. And this is the place that is outside of the realm of victim consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because the human part of our nature is very much entrenched in this victim consciousness, which is a huge virus in the human condition. It will not let us see past what's happening to me and to others. The moment you engage with that question, you are literally going to a place within you beneath the place where those patterns started. And you are getting an answer outside the frame of reference, outside literally of the consciousness, the deeper consciousness, outside the problem of what your eyes see. So when Einstein said you can't solve the problem from the consciousness that created the problem, this is why we ask the question, why is this happening for me? Because you're engaging the consciousness outside of the consciousness that created the problem in the first place. Was that helpful?
Teray?
Yeah, if you're asking me,
it
definitely was. Thank you, August.
Okay,
I appreciate
great.
It.
Try the question on for size. See what kinds of answers come to you. This is not analysis, by the way. This isn't us analyzing what's going on in our head. This is about us by default going deeper into ourselves to find the deeper conversation life is having with us. And if I could make a plug right now, I would make a plug for taking a breath before you ask the question. Because there are about 1,000 good reasons why taking a breath will open a space within you and bring you from your head down to your heart so that you can feel into the question and feel the answer rather than letting it be an analytical discussion in your head, which still is not going to take you any deeper than what your eyes see. Take the breath with any question you ask, for what you're doing is dropping down deeper. By default, you will be exchanging your human eyes for your deeper eyes.
Beautiful. And Tyree, I just really want to thank you for such a thoughtful and
intelligent question. Excellent
question. Really helpful. Thank you so much. Thank you for being with us. August, I just think this has been such an extraordinary contribution to the conversation. I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, you're so welcome. It was just totally my pleasure.
Yeah, and I'm actually thinking of hopping a plane to come to your talk in August, in April. At the...
Oh, excellent. Don't threaten.
I would love to go and be at that, so I'm going to look into that. But I just want to encourage everyone again, if you are in New York City or in the surrounding areas, to please go see August at the Ethical Culture Society at Central Park West and 64th, the first Wednesday of every month. And to please go to her website, augustgold.net. Two things that have been offered tonight. One is a download of this wonderful talk, A Hero's Journey, to bring you deeper into the conversation. And then the other is your invitation to participate in the April 5th teleconference, and that's free for people. So just go to augustgold.net to find out more about that. August, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Catherine. It was a good time.
Yeah, it was really, really rich. We've really loved having you.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I was honored, really.
You're very welcome. Okay, take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So just want to thank all of you for being with us, and if you're interested in diving deeper into the conversation, I want to encourage you to join our Facebook and or Gaia groups where you can participate in the discussion forums on any of the topics that we discussed today. You go to facebook.com and you search for Feminine Power Global Community, or you can just click on the link in the email that we sent you today. And if you have any friends that you think might be interested in joining us for the conversation, please forward them one of our emails so that they can hop on board. And if someone sent you this audio, or if you just found it on the internet somewhere and you'd like to listen to the other dialogues in the series, please go to womenontheedgeofevolution.com. And finally, I want to thank our team at Feminine Power and all of the sponsors who have made this possible, including our event partners, the Gaia Community and the Shift Movie, and our co-sponsors, Integral Enlightenment, iEvolve Global Practice Community, Agape International Spiritual Center, Enlighten Next, Next Step Integral, The First 30 Days, Hub Humanity Unites Brilliance, and Don Beckett Spiral Dynamics Integral. So please join us. Next Saturday, we have an amazing speaker coming on Saturday morning. Melissa Etheridge will be with us, and her talk is going to be on fearless love, living lives of searing authenticity and audacious courage. In order to participate fully in life and bring forth the unique creative gifts that are ours alone to midwife into the world, we must learn how to walk the precarious line between courage and surrender. We must wholeheartedly give ourselves over to the deepest impulse of love that is seeking to guide our lives. Living in service to love's highest yearning is not a soft and gentle concept. It requires a fierce and uncompromising commitment to authenticity and truth that, once made, will burn through everything within us that obstructs the deeper calling on our lives. Love strips us bare and grinds us down until there is nothing left but the polished diamond of our essential nature shining forth from the center of our heart as a selfless offering of beauty to the world. The journey is not for the faint-hearted. As musical genius, cultural activist, and spiritual seeker Melissa Etheridge poignantly points out, our love has to be nothing less than fearless. We need to have fearless love. So please join us on Saturday morning for a beautiful, intimate conversation with singer-songwriter and Academy Award winner Melissa Etheridge. Look in your email box for instructions on how to join us on that call. And also, for those of you who are interested in joining us and continuing the conversation, there is a conference call immediately following this one where you are going to have an opportunity to engage with one another. So we encourage all of you to go to your inbox, check your emails where we have given you a link to register yourself for that call and join us on that call. So until then, I want to thank all of you for being with us and joining us. We're going to unmute the lines so you can all say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you,
everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.